Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Step Up, deinem Female Leadership Talk rund um das Thema Frauen und Führung. Ich bin Nora Ast, ich bin Wirtschaftspsychologin und systemische Therapeutin und unterstütze mit meinem Unternehmen Leading Mindfully Führungskräfte im Finden und Leben eines mutigen und authentischen Führungsstils. Mich beschäftigt dabei die Frage, was es braucht, damit wir mehr Frauen in Führungspositionen haben und wie Frauen es gelingen kann, dabei ihre ganz persönlichen Stärken einzusetzen. Um hier spannende und vielfältige Antworten zu finden, spreche ich in diesem Podcast mit unterschiedlichen Gesprächspartnern und Gesprächspartnerinnen. Ich freue mich, dass ihr dabei seid und wünsche euch viel Spaß. Hello and welcome to a new episode of our Female Leadership Talk. Now that you hear me talk in English, you're probably already starting to wonder whether the whole episode will be in English. And the answer is yes, because today my guest is very international. And so we thought, although she lives in Germany, that we will be doing this talk in English so that all of our friends and followers worldwide can listen to our powerful messages afterwards. And by now, you're probably really curious to hear who I will be talking to today. And I will be talking to Luciana Cevares, who is a designer and responsible for the brand style of Mazda, the automotive manufacturer. And I'm very much looking forward to this because we will not only talk about her career, her biography, but also about a little bit about design and the automotive industry and some trends here and whether they're differences in the preferences between male and female. And we will also hear about her thoughts on female leadership and how she organizes and her husband organize themselves around the jobs and the family and everything. So welcome, Luciana. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Nora.
So where are you right now? Are you in Germany?
I'm in Germany. I'm in my place in Stuttgart, where I live with my family, my husband and two boys.
Yeah,
at home because of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever go back right now and see your team?
Yes. Mostly I go once a week to the office in Frankfurt, which is kind of like 200 kilometers from Stuttgart. And yeah, nowadays I go only once a week. Before I used to go 4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
So 400 kilometers in one day.
Exactly.
On four days a week. Wow. We will hear a little bit about that later in the podcast. And your boys, how old are they?
They're 16 and 11.
Ah, okay.
Like almost grown ups.
Almost grown up. But still at home.
Still at home, yes. Both.
Okay. And yeah, maybe in the beginning, let's start with tell us a little bit about what your job looks like. What do you do? How big is your team? Yeah. Okay. Just give us some insights on that.
So, yeah, my job is an amazing job. That's also the reason why I commute so far to do my job, because it's not like something that you easily find an option like this. So basically, I lead 3 people at the moment, and my job is very diversified. So every day is a new task and a new challenge. And mainly what we do is I have to create consistency in all touch points of the Mazda brand in terms of design. So it's the look and feel, the storytelling, everything has to be consistent to communicate our brand the way that we want to our customers. And so that means that I take care of campaigns for TVC together with our marketing teams. And I take care of the brand style when we talk about trade fairs, etc. And basically what we do is we brief the agencies with what we want Mazda to look like in the end of the day, that's what we do. So we need to show the customer what our company is and what are the relevant message that we are trying to convey to our customers. So we talk directly together with the agencies, regardless if it's an advertisement agency, if it's a trade fair builder, if it's a CGA agency. We have to brief them and talk directly to them from the design perspective.
Okay, so if I see a TV commercial that is on Mazda, and I actually did last week and I thought of you. So you were probably involved in that.
Exactly, from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Together, of course, together with our marketing teams, with our brand engagement team, we build up a group of people that know exactly how the company and how our brand and products have to look like. And then everyone has a say when it comes to what the commercial will look like.
And who defines your brand values? Do you do that with your team or does the marketing do that? Who defines what's important for the Mazda brand?
Basically, we do a lot of research and we look at how our brand is developing and how customers are perceiving us or journalists, etc. And then based on that, we do proposals. And it's not only us in Europe, but also our colleagues in the US and our colleagues in headquarters. We are all constantly looking at how our brand is performing and how we can get even better. And based on this information, then we create proposals, design proposals that are presented in our headquarters. And then we come up with a common agreement. And this common agreement is then spread throughout the company. And then, and basically we need to align on that. It's a lot of talks and discussions until we get to the point, but it's very, very interesting. And as I said, like every day is something new and very challenging.
How come you live in Germany? Take us a little bit through your biography.
Okay, so this was a little bit surprising even to me, because to be honest, I've never had any clear relationship to Germany. I'm not like, I don't have German ancestors or what else, which is kind of common in Brazil where I come from, but in my family, not at all. I am Portuguese and Brazilian basically. And then, first I started my career studying architecture, which was more or less an imposed choice, because I come from a very academic family. My both parents are professors, and then, and so they influenced a little bit that I should go for a more kind of
intellectual path.
intellectual path. And so the most creative, I knew that I wanted to do something creative. That was really clear to me, like since I am, I think, 12 or something like this. Like I knew that I wanted something creative. And so the most creative alternative that I had was like to go for architecture. And in fact, it is a creative direction. And it depends also on the university that you are in. But I was in a very technical university in Brazil. So from the beginning, I knew, okay, I'm going to do this, but that's not going to be what I will do for a living. Definitely not. So from the beginning, I was looking into courses and seminars that could really like add to my creativity and also like still my necessity of expressing myself creatively. So I did like Goldsmith's courses, graphic design, etc. And in Brazil, it's very common that we work part-time during the university years. So I was working 1.5 years in a very small architecture office, and I really liked my bosses. It was really nice. It was a couple, and then they were really nice. We were working well together. And when I graduated, they asked me if I wanted to join them in a partnership. In that moment, it was really clear to me, like, oh my God, I have to do something else. I cannot get that levels of being adult at this time. So I decided to come to Europe. So I came to Germany with nothing but a small suitcase, and I looked for a master course in something creative. So that's how I came to Germany. And then I found my course in Munich, where I studied product design. So it was not a straightforward way. It was more like with ups and downs.
And how many years ago was that?
Oh, it was long ago. It was in 97,
Okay, so both your
last
boys,
century.
both of your boys grew up in Germany.
Yes, exactly. So no, but they weren't born at all. I met my husband during the university, and basically he was the one that he told me, there is a field in the automotive industry, because he was very much into automotive business and automotive design. And he told me, there is a field in automotive that might fit you, and it's color and materials design. So that's how I came to Mazda, because then I applied, and when I started, I knew that's the thing that I wanted to do.
And you know what? Actually, I didn't tell you that when we first talked. I worked for a company. I did what we call in Germany an apprenticeship, and I worked for a company that develop and produce coatings. And I was in the automotive sector, and all the interior coatings I was a project manager for.
Nice.
For Nissan, Volkswagen, General Motors, BMW. I'm
Very cool.
responsible for the US and the Brazilian market.
Oh,
So I
really? So
know,
you have a
yeah.
connection.
So I know a little bit about that field. I talk to a lot of designers and their extraordinary wishes and desires and how the color should look like. And just one shade, like you have a black. What do you think is black? And they have
Millions.
millions of blacks. And could we do this just a shade bluer?
Yeah.
Blue? This is black. What are you talking about? Okay. Yeah. All right. Nice. And yeah, let's talk a bit about design and the automotive industry. What are the current trends that you observe?
The automotive industry is passing through major changes currently. I think with the technification, the electrification, and the automation, we are seeing things happen that we've never seen at this fast pace before. And also
Like
the
what?
changes,
Like
like
what?
in also the changes in consumer behavior regarding like ownership. So that is all like influencing the way that cars are perceived. And so we have like two major poles, in my opinion. We have the supercars from one side, and from the other side, we have the super mobility, what I call like is mobility as a service. And I think this is influencing everything, not only the colors and the materials, but how cars are built and made. And this is the challenges that we are working with at the moment, like as companies, how do you react to this? What do we offer? Like, mm-hmm. are we going to be competitors to Lucid, Tesla, and all the others that are coming up with these big supercars? Or are we more going through private ownership? And how do we react to movements like declining ownership? What is happening? It was happening much more strong before COVID, of course. COVID did influence a little bit that people go back to buy private cars. Mm-hmm. But I think in a long term, we will see more and more that ownership is not really a preference for every customer.
And what's the influence here? Is it that values have changed throughout generations, that younger generations, maybe status is not as important anymore? Where does that come from?
I think there are two factors. I think status is still important also for younger generation. It's just shown in a different way. Mm-hmm. I mean, our society is very polarized at the moment through the social media, through the communication in very high levels. We have lots of polarization in every field. So,
can you give some examples? What are the poles?
I mean, we have the right wing and the left wing, super strong, and like in every sense, we have polarized opinions for everything. Basically, I think it's also because, people join together in groups and they tend to hear just what they want to hear. So I think that's definitely why it polarizes. But on what happens is that we don't have jobs as we used to have before, and we are not so strongly connected to a place anymore. And it's going to be even more. Like when I came to Germany, I was the only foreign student in my university. It was really strange. Like either the students were like, okay, they were migrants. They came to Germany with their families to live here, but they were not foreign students. And I came and I was the only one in Germany. Of course, they were already in the US. The things were different now, US and UK. But and I think this is going to be even more potentialized now with mm-hmm. with the whole technology, because now people can be somewhere else, even if they are in their home countries. That is amazing from one side and scary from the other side. And then this influences how people act and buy.
Mm-hmm, of course. And let's focus also on women.
Okay.
What are their demands? Do you see a polarization here as well between the demands or desires of women and men? Or how do women come into place? Maybe we have two different points here. One is the automotive and one is the design part.
Yeah, I think like with the automotive, well, I mentioned already, like with the supercars and the super mobility, I tend to see the supercars as a little bit masculine and more, like showing power, showing individualism, etc. I think this is very masculine somehow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like there are women that are masculine, and then we come to mobility as a service. It's maybe a little bit more on the urban social side, and then sharing, caring, and maybe a little bit more feminine or not gender related. And I think this is like a strong difference on both, like, and also for mobility as a service, I see many women in leadership for this field. I think in Stuttgart there is this lab 1881, and it's a woman that leads the lab, etc. So I think this is what happens from the trends.
And so, does there need to be a supercar or also for women? Because I always hear that when female leaders step into their roles in companies, and then they're offered a car. And sometimes they're offered the car of the person who had the job before them. And they say, wow, this car, it's too big for me. It costs so much. Why would I need a car like this? And then if we look at the differences, the personality traits, the differences of personality traits between men and women, we see that on average, male are more prone to risk taking. They're more prone to competition, whereas women, as you said, are more communal oriented. So do you think there's a need for a female supercar that women in leadership can identify with?
I wonder what would that be? I mean, like, I think,
More
yes.
practical, a little bit show off, nice design, but at the same time practical.
Yes, that's the thing. Eh? I think that's the main difference between male and women. Like, talking generally, very generally, but like, women are interested in practical solutions for mobility, and that's why mobility as a service is very practical. So I think a supercar for a woman would be inserted in this context of the mobility as a service. So you can, if you are in the mood, you can take that car, but you're not gonna own it because it's too complicated or it doesn't fit your grocery shopping, etc., etc. I think that's the main thing, especially when we talk about women that do have a family, they tend to see things in this into this practicality, practicality issues,
Approach.
not an
Issues.
approach.
And so since I saw your one of your commercials last week on TV, and how do you is there a different approach to commercials nowadays because you try to fit in the need of males and females and the desires, or is that our commercials are they still like they have been 10 years ago? Is there a difference on the male and female part?
I think, yeah, it depends on the product. I mean, in the past, and sometimes still in some countries, we used to target the cars like this, like the big car, the more expensive, etc. It would be targeted for males, the first car, and then for the females, we would have the B car, the smaller car that is meant to do the groceries, to bring the kids to school, etc.
Sit in good parking situations. So if you
Exactly.
run errands and do all the shoppings, that it doesn't cost you a lot of time.
Exactly. But nowadays, it's like you don't know who is gonna drive the second car, or is the second car really a second car, or is it gonna be used as a primary car, and you use the first big car as a weekend car only to go larger distances. Like, I think in many cases, if you're living in urban environments, you're gonna have the second car first, and you're gonna drive it to the groceries, to the kids, to the school, and regardless if it's mom, dad, or who else. I mean, that's the difficulty also nowadays to create commercials that people can relate to it. We cannot do like a super men, women, gender division like it was in the 50s. We are over it now. It's almost 100 years ago.
Thankfully, yes, we're over it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry for the hard questions, but I thought it's just very interesting to learn about that. And let's talk about female leadership in the automotive sector. Do you see more women getting into female leadership positions in the automotive or also in the designer field? What are your observations here?
I see it's improving with time. It's still a long way to go. And yeah, what surprises me really is that in the creative industries or in the creative field, women are not very well represented. And that's really historically also fundamented, because like I watched an amazing documentary last year about the women in Bauhaus. And how they were treated. And it was very, very nice. I don't remember the name, actually. But it was a very nice documentary to see the differences and how women were discouraged to create designs in that time. So we see, like, we always imagine the creative field as being progressive and more advanced. But sometimes I feel we lack back in some points. Nevertheless, we have wonderful examples of women that were like great protagonists in this field, like Ray Eames and Zaha Hadid, etc. So I think, yeah, but still, it's still a way to go. But I think in every field is difficult. Even like I always think like, oh, okay, cuisine should be like something women are meant to cook. But like in cuisine, how many master chefs do we know that are female?
I think it's often because the environment is so competitive and so
maybe
stressful and, I don't know, and the working hours.
Yeah, not only this, I think like what you said before, like men are more competitive and women tend to say, ah, okay, never mind. I'm okay. If they don't want, then I don't do it. It's very bad, actually. It's not a very positive characteristic, because we should be more like, yeah, let's do it. Let's stay on.
And I feel what I observe a lot, you know, I think that's something a lot of times we hear, that women do not want to take the challenge. They refuse to go into leadership positions when they're offered. And I feel that the conditions under which the leadership jobs take place, that they are typically, an average, very male made. they really suit like the typical, in the old days, typical male culture, working long hours, being very competitive, being very political, and less of being, hey, let's see ourselves as a team and do this together. And so I observed that a lot of women, they don't want to play that game. And they feel that it's going to be a very tough and long way of maybe also suffering and losing. Yeah.
And giving up too much things, giving up too much. I think like in some countries, they already started to get away from this, these conditions, these male conditions for leadership jobs, where like I think in Sweden they have like 30 hours a week for everyone, which is already very helpful. Because if you don't have to stay the until long hours in the office, then you can balance better between career and family life. And this is a gain for everyone, to be
Of
honest. I
course.
mean, like, it's not only for women, it's for men too. I mean, I think it's like it's a great gift for the daddies if they
Yeah,
can
for
come and see their kids and not
yeah.
only kiss them good night, which
Of
is
course.
like, I mean,
Yeah.
if
Yeah.
you have the chance, and I think it's gonna be even more, it's gonna increase even more later, because now with the home office being institutionalized everywhere, so it's gonna be easier. Like, I remember when I got Luca, my oldest son, I already like thought about having kind of hybrid combination of working hours from home and from the office, and it wasn't possible due to policies. And I think this is the best ever possibility. Like, you see your
Now,
team, yeah, you see your team, and you are at home when you need it, because
Yeah, I think it is, but it needs clear rules between you and your partner on doing this, because if you do not have them, one ends up doing more.
That's true. The mental load.
The mental load,
Yeah,
definitely.
exactly.
Yeah. And
So,
so, how old were your kids when you got into your first leadership role?
they were already a little bit older. Like, it was not so long ago, because due to my life conditions of living so far away, I was also working part-time many years, which was really very helpful to keep the track on my profession and still have time and have a life with my family, because I had to move to Stuttgart, and it is really far away. So I first got into the leadership role when I was able to do home office. Because then I could combine. Then I could work more hours and from home. So it was possible to conciliate both.
Okay, so you told your company, I'm going to do this job, but I need a little bit of home office hours.
Yeah, I need home office hours. I can do it. I can travel a lot, and that's no problem. But I need also time at home, because that's what we talked about before, nah? Like, we don't want to give up everything that we have, because it's also important.
Yeah, and how did you? I'm always curious, and I decided to ask that every female leader or also male leader that I have in my podcast. How do you organize your family life, like between work and family, and do you split things with your partner? And is
Yes,
that a challenge?
that was a challenge. It still is. I think younger couples, they are more easier on doing it, because they don't have pre-established conditions, and they agree on having shared tasks and functions at home. In my case, it was when the kids were young, it was kind of complicated, because you have to have some kind of structure, and you need to tell your partner how to structure the week, for instance, so that mom has time, dad has time, kids have time, and we all have time together. It's very important. And I remember my husband telling me, like, oh, you were organizing our family as if we were a company, and you are the manager. And he was not very happy about it, which I understood, because it's also like, from one side, men, or at least my husband, yeah, he wanted to do something. He wanted to help, which I think it's okay, Help. I don't need help. I need a
Help is
team
not
member.
responsibility.
Yes, exactly. I need a team member. It's not only help. We are both in this boat. It's like help I can get from outside. Yeah. And then I pay for that. And then, but like, yeah, it was difficult to convince him at the beginning. But I think,
What helped you convincing it? What helped you get into the roles? Do you have a tip for all these women out there?
Yeah, I think like talk, talk, talk. There's going to be lots of discussions, heated discussions anyway, because it's very, very difficult, and especially when the kids are small and you need really to organize.
Yeah.
But don't give up.
Yeah,
like,
don't give up.
Always, because also one thing is like, okay, sometimes it seems like, okay, it's so tiring. And, but on the other hand, it's also very, how do you say? Yeah, you get a lot from it. So everything, if everything works, and at the end of the day, if you don't give up, you're going to see it's fruiting, like you have a fruitful return.
So, from both sides, you know, you have the accomplishment at work.
Yeah.
You feel like you're influencing something, you're using your competencies there. And you're not, how you said before, you kind of do not lose track. You keep on doing things, you know.
Exactly.
And then on the other side, you have the role with your family, and that is a very different role, and it's nice as well.
Yeah.
And I liked it that you said you run it like a manager. What I did when we when I knew I was pregnant, and I felt I would organize all the things around the baby, and I was like, no, this is not right, because I'm doing all the organization, like most part. And then I started thinking, what does my husband know? And I came up, he knows project management plans. So I laid the whole baby preparation phase. I laid it out like a project. And we did project meetings every Saturday, or every Sunday, and everybody got their milestones and tasks to do.
Like,
and then we did the done in progress, pending open. And that was good. And I can, pass on responsibility, pass on the whole package of something.
Yeah.
And not just a part, pass on tasks as a whole.
Exactly. No, because it's like, if you have to think about everything, you are stressed anyway. Like, it's invisible and it's a stress. Yeah. So I remember, but in the beginning, like lots of things I would have like babysitters for everything. Yeah. Like, for, I want to do sports, then I will get a babysitter to be with my boy when I'm doing sports. And it was fine. But then sometimes my husband would come home earlier on that date, and I would get mad, you know, like, why are you coming earlier? The babysitter is here. She's just a half an hour here. You cannot do this to the babysitter. Yeah. Like, this, she's going to quit if she comes only for a half an hour. And it's like, it's complex.
Yeah. Structure really helps, splitting up the days. What's your major learning, or like one major thing you said? For me, it's like the project plan that was very great that we did. Or what we did was, each person, also now with COVID, it's a little bit different, but each one of us has 2 nights a week that they can do whatever they want. Or pass out entire task. Do you have one thing where you say, hey, this really worked for us?
I think for us, what works is like going out once a week or once every second week. It helps, because it's a little bit like a project management, but then it's a manager's meeting. we have fun.
Yeah.
We talk
yeah.
about the issues at home.
Yeah.
But we also like enjoy.
You do a team.
So you
do
have
team
like
building.
Yeah, exactly. Team building.
Cool.
Exactly.
And when you were offered your leadership position, did you have any doubts, or what were your challenges?
Well, my kids were already quite big. I mean, I think Luca was 12 and Caio was 7. So it was okay. So from the organization was okay. I had some question marks about how am I gonna be perceived because I'm coming from a half or a part-time job into a leadership role, and how is this gonna work? It was very challenging in a certain way, but it's also worth it because I had amazing experiences. I was commuting a lot. Like I say, I was because with COVID, I'm not doing it anymore. Like I think I've been in Leverkusen, which is our marketing and sales department. I've been once since COVID started because it's
So you commuted 4 days a week, you said, and then you earned your master's while commuting because you had so much
Yes.
time on the train. You told me when we talked
Exactly.
first. Wow. Okay.
Exactly. I wanted to learn more. This was something that I always wanted to do. Like when I got 40, I wanted to study again to have this experience. And then I went to for a master's degree that was distance based, so I could do everything online apart from 1 or 2 weeks a semester. And then lots of readings, and I said like, okay, it's perfect. And in the description, it was written that we need between 15 and 20 hours a week for it. And I
You
said like,
added your time on
okay,
the train.
I have
I
this
can do
time.
that.
It's wonderful.
Do you see, when you look at female leaders, do you see that they have certain strengths that they really can use and should use? There's something you observe, especially in female leaders.
Yeah, I think like one thing that I like to say is that we women we have resilience and empathy, which helps a lot. We are educated for that actually because we are the caretakers, so to say, more or less historically. And so I think nowadays what we've seen with COVID-19, for instance, is like resilience is a must. And we saw also how resilient we are. In 1 week, the whole humanity organized themselves into home office, homeschooling, etc. Everywhere I hear this, it's amazing. And I think like, in empathy of seeing what is happening, what is going on here. We do have a big problem, a major problem, and how we are going to react. I remember in the beginning of the pandemics, when school and everything was overwhelming me, like from everything, I said like, okay, I'm gonna tell my company I need to be to do bigger pauses during lunchtime because I don't want my kids to get nuts with this, you know, like then we're gonna have lunch together, all four, every day, and it's gonna be freshly cooked lunch. And I said this to my boss, and it was okay. So I would do every day 1.5 hours lunch break. And I think these are like, I don't see this from my husband, for instance. That for him
The
it was like, yes.
initiative to think of things like that.
Yeah, and like, how do we manage to get more or less a healthy environment in this crisis? And then, because for him, like, I don't have time. I have a meeting lunchtime. Well, quit the meetings. This is the meeting now. The meeting is
This is
now,
your
and
meeting.
this is your
This is your
meeting.
meeting with your most important team members.
Exactly, yeah, and that's what we are doing. We are doing this every day, and then it was okay. And also, like for my company, it was not at all an issue. It was okay. I mean, like, the exception is that I accept meetings during the lunchtime. The rule is now I have my lunchtime with the kids.
And so resilience and empathy, how does that benefit leaders? Can you give examples maybe like directly from in the workplace?
In the workplace, I think it's like because, well, we are changing constantly. The automation makes most of us irrelevant in a certain way, or we need to change. We need to see things differently because robots are going to take over. They're going to take most of the jobs. And so that's where empathy and resilience come, where it's not for a colleague or an employee, it's not important title or money. Money, of course, you need at least a little bit, but like not, it's not the first place. The first place is recognition and trust. I think this is the most important thing, especially with the home office. You know, like if you are onto this super controlling thing and everything, it's not going to work because people tend to react differently to stress. And depending on how it is, especially in a crisis situation, you have to come up and understand the other person's needs. Because otherwise, you're just going to create a conflict, an unnecessary conflict that is going to stress even more the people. And I think if you talk, if you understand and you see what is going on and you talk with people, then you get the best reactions. And once you did this, you're going to see it's going to come back because they're going to see that they can count on you and that you can, that they can be more productive and even more motivated. It's not, there's nothing that everyone knows that. Yeah. There's nothing that can make you more ill than having a bad leader or a bad boss.
Who doesn't care about you.
Who doesn't care about you, who doesn't hear, etc. And then if you have this, then you're going to give it back to the company in the most different ways. Yeah. With ideas, with engagement, etc.
And what do you want to say to the women out there that listen to it to step into leadership roles? Like, what do you want to say to motivate them, or what message do you have?
Yeah, I think the more we have, ideally we would have like 50-50 men and women, 50-50 old and young, 50-50 all, you know, like, because the most important thing is that we have different opinions and different points of view. And I think every woman that wants to be in a leadership role, they should go for it and try to figure out with their partners or with their kids or with their bosses what is the path to it and how to accomplish what you want. And I think the more that we are if we are represented on the top, we can influence more alone from our worldview. So how do we see things? It's already helping. And I mean, we have a in Germany, we have a woman on the top, which is nice. And we see she did lots of things differently. At the moment, a little bit difficult with the whole crisis, but mostly it was successful and we could see that it works. And it's not the only case.
Yeah, I think it's being represented in the decisions that are being made, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have time for one last question?
Yes.
Okay. Do you see, if you compare Germany and Brazil with each other, do you feel that in Brazil it's easier for women to step into leadership roles, or is there no difference?
Yeah, it's difficult to say. I think Brazil is far away from being a country where equality takes place. I think in Germany, we do have more equality, but not when it comes to women that do have a family. And I think this is very bad, actually. It's changing now. It already changed a lot in the past 11 years, 12 years. But it's like, I think this image of the mother in Germany doesn't help women with families stepping up to leadership roles, because they are only the mother can take place, can take care of the kids. You know, like it's very, for me, it was a very German behavior. Like in Brazil, okay, of course, everyone is important, but like we need to work for women need to work for the money, for like many, we have other problems, like mothers that don't have a father to take care of the kid, etc. You know, like different problems. And then for there, from there, this side, it's normal that women go to work. And in Germany, it's like, I remember like being questioned like, but can't your husband sustain the whole family? And I was like, okay. Why?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was like a little bit like 50s, yeah. And yeah, I think these are the differences, but it's changing a lot. I see in my colleagues. I remember when I got my son, my first son, I was maybe one of the only ones in the design department, female. I was the only female with a kid in the design department. All the others, no, either the wife would stay at home and take care of the kids for the men, or they didn't have kids. And now, my colleagues all have women, like all have wives that work and take care of the kids, and sometimes they take some time off to take care of their kids, etc. It's changing.
Yeah, but I think it's still a lot of work, and it's a lot of work for women to really get there, because it's so much about negotiation. You know, you got to negotiate with your partner. How do you split this up? You got to negotiate with your employer. I need a home office. I need this and that.
Yeah.
You got to negotiate with your kids.
Yeah.
You know, especially when they're older, that they are fine with the structure. You got to negotiate with your team when you're approachable and when you're not. And really, it is a lot of work. And I think it's a lot on our shoulders. And I think if we do it and if we last long enough in it, as you said, you know, at the end of the day, you come home and you're satisfied and you like it. But I think the path there is really path of learning and fighting a little bit of the battle.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, it's a battle, but but it's a nice one.
Yeah, it's a good one. And you learn a lot.
Exactly, because when I hear from my friends that decided to step out of the job, due to maternity, I see a little bit of regret. I hear, maybe I'm biased, but I hear a little bit of regret. And when I was fighting the battle, it was tough. Many times I thought like, oh, I'm not gonna do this, I cannot. But then at the end, like now with almost grown up kids, is like, that was worth it. Because also, it's also an education thing. Now I have two boys and I'm educating them to be emancipated.
Nice.
I want my daughters-in-law to like me.
Yep.
Exactly. So my daughters or my sons-in-law, I don't know, but I want them to
Yep.
like me, yeah, and I want
Yep.
them to see that the job division is being done, and that the kids are well-grown
Yep.
young adults.
Yeah. Okay, good. Very nice. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for all the insights. Is there anything left that you want to share, or are you fine with? Did you say
Yeah, I'm
everything you
fine.
wanted
I
to
mean, like,
say?
yeah, speak up.
Speak
It's
up.
like
Yeah.
speak up and say what you want and what you need to get to where you want to be. Just,
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay, thank
Okay.
you.
Thank you, Nora.